Blog Talk Radio.
Take back control.
gentlemen, welcome to the Rifleman Radio Show. I'd like to thank everybody for listening in tonight. We've got hopefully a great show that we want to bring you, because tonight we're going to be talking about what the election, this last election, could possibly mean for America. We had President Barack Obama the last 4 years, and now he's been reelected to serve an additional 4 years as our president to guide the nation. And we'd like for folks to call in to give us their ideas and thoughts on this tonight. Now, remember that we're not gonna do any kind of dogging of anybody, any party. We're not going to dog the president. If you can state facts, and that's fine. But no dogging, no political fights, nothing like that. All we're going to do is talk about what this could possibly mean to America. Because at the end of the day, what we want to do is we want to do our best to try and make the best possible nation we could possibly have. And that's our goal. That's the goal of Appleseed. Trying to ensure that we safeguard the freedoms and liberties that the founders brought to this nation, that we adhere to the documents that they used to guide us in the day-to-day operations of this republic, and to do our best, each and every one of us, to share the responsibility for making this the absolute best nation it can possibly be. So that's what we would like to keep the discussion about. If you've got grief with something, I have no problem with that. I'd like you to keep it factual and no yelling or screaming or cursing or anything like that, okay? We're going to start the show off first with the way we usually do, and that is we're going to open the lines up for you guys to call in and to tell your local crews thank you. When I say local crews, I'm talking about the local Appleseed Project crews, the instructors, and all the people involved in running the Appleseed Project, whose mission is to bring you the absolute best fundamentals of rifle marksmanship program in the nation today, the absolute best. There's no one that does it anywhere near what we do. There's really hardly anyone that does it at all anymore. But there's no one that does it like we do. And every weekend in the nation, there is an Appleseed Rifle Marksmanship event going on within reasonable driving distance of you somewhere in the nation. And these individuals are all part of the Appleseed Project's nonprofit organization, determined to donate their time. Thank you very much. You don't need to sign anything? Okay. This is my shoot box. I told you guys that it's not like I'm in the top of a tower somewhere in an office doing a radio show. I'm actually doing it down my back steps tonight, and the UPS man just now came with my shoot box, which is good. We've got to shoot in about 9 days, so it's good to have a shoot box. All right. The number is 347-308-8790. 347-308-8790. You can call in. As a matter of fact, we'll open up the lines now. You can call in for to either talk about thanking your local crews, or you want to start talking about the election and what it means to you. And we'll be glad to talk to you about that, too. I've got the train of the family members passing me by right now, one by one, so I can give them each a kiss, welcoming kiss home. They're all they're all just filing in from the many things that they're involved in. We've got five daughters, and they're all involved in something. And tonight it was cheerleading and basketball and I don't know what else. But they're just now filing in at the end of a long day, and they're looking in the oven to make sure that I put some pizzas in there. And, all right. I'm looking at the chat room, and I can see some of the people. Ed says he doesn't think the election changes anything, and he may be right on that. But even if he's right, even if you're right, Ed, there's still things that we need to change. There are things that we need to do to ensure that we are in fact maintaining and building the absolute best nation that we can. So when you call in, that's one of the things that we would like you to that we'd like you to talk about too. And that is, what can we be doing? We got 4 years that are going to be. I don't know if they're going to be like the last 4 years or not. But there's going to be another 4 years with President Barack Obama as our president. I can tell you one thing that that is happening, and that that is the ammunition and firearms panic, the same one that occurred 4 years ago. You guys might remember that. That was one of the things that has blocked me out of a lot of gun ranges, and that is the folks who have some kind of a fear on some level that something that President Obama is going to do is going to jeopardize their Second Amendment rights. And 4 years ago, there was a big run on firearms and then on ammunition. I'm sure you all remember that. That was the first powder alarm. And the shells went dry all across the country. You couldn't get ammunition for I don't care what it was. You couldn't get ammunition. And I remember going into the Walmarts and seeing all the Walmart shelves stripped bare, and the worker who was there saw me looking at the ammunition shelf, and he just shrugged his shoulders and held his hands, and you know, like, well, nothing I can do about it. And all across, I don't know what it's like in the rest of the country, but I know that in places like Houston and Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, I know that the ammunition in the shelves there is starting to run dry. I know my partner and I helped to clear the shelves by grabbing 4,000 or 5,000 rounds of ammunition, and that was done because of what happened last year. If you remember last year, like I said, when the ammunition was gone, it was gone. So I think that everyone is in that same mode now. But there's plenty of other things that we can talk about here. One of the things that I would like to get you guys to do, you guys that are listening and running your computers, take a look at Barack Obama's at his executive orders, the executive orders that he's run since he's been in office. He's run out 140 executive orders, and I'd like you guys to take a look at the executive orders that have been run out and see what you think about those. This is what you should be doing anyway. Part of what you should be doing as a citizen is paying attention to the things that are going on in the government. And that would be making sure that you're aware of the things the government is doing. One of those things that they're doing is you have executive orders that are issued by the White House pertaining to everything under the sun. Someone sent me a list the other day, and okay, here's one. Here's just one executive order. Executive Order 13515, signed in order to increase participation of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in federal programs. They're trying to increase the number of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in federal programs. Why? Why are we doing that? Why are you trying to increase the number of people on the federal payroll? Because the more people that are receiving a government check, then the more people are going to be voting for the candidate who's going to continue to deliver the massive amount of checks that go out for everything. I'm reading just the other day how, I believe it was in New York, there was, I would imagine, let's see, I think it was between $7 and $9 million that was spent to advertise and to try and get New Yorkers on welfare and Medicaid and food stamps, etc. They spent $7 million to advertise in order to try and get people to sign up on government programs. I'm not sure that's the direction that we should be going in. However, you can tell me what you think, all right? The number is 347-308-8790. 347-308-8790. All right, we'd like to thank the folks for tuning in, but we'd also like to thank our local Appleseed crews. These are the folks who donate their weekends, and a lot of people, they donate everything. They donate their time, they get their gas, their ammunition, their rifles, everything. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to push forward the Appleseed Project message. They're trying to teach the absolute best fundamentals of rifle marksmanship course in the nation, and at the same time, talk to folks about how this country began, you know, where it began, how it began. Most folks have some kind of a nebulous idea about how the nation began. They know that there's something that has to do with a shot heard around the world. There's something that has to do with Paul Revere, but they're not exactly sure. And you run through bands of knowledge because early on, the kids in the elementary and level are taught about this, and a lot of them have a fairly good grip on it at times, and then they kind of lose it as they're going up through the school system, and there are different bands of people who will have knowledge of it for different reasons. Perhaps it's local to them. All the folks in the Boston area are familiar with the beginning of the nation because that's where it happened. On April 19th, 1775, that's when our nation began. And when you go to an Appleseed Rifle Marksmanship Weekend, then you're going to hear the story of how it began. You're going to hear about who was there, what they did, why they did it, and then possibly you hear some of the stories about the founders' ideas for the nation. And are we adhering to those ideas? That's one of the things that you, as a person that's attending the course, will have to ask yourself afterwards. Are we adhering to the ideas, to the words that the founders wrote to create the nation? All right, I know a lot of people talk about the Constitution being living and breathing, and we don't need a Constitution. We're mature enough now that we can We can govern the nation. We can run the nation without the Constitution. And I got to tell you, that's like one of the most dangerous things I've ever heard in my life. That would be like being out in the middle of the ocean, I think, and telling the person that's got their hand back there on the motor, you know, in the little skiff you're in, get your hand off it because we don't need that thing. We don't need it. We can, the nation will guide itself. I mean, let's go with the tiller. And the boat just starts going in circles, or it goes sideways into the waves. It flounders. It sinks. I think that's what would happen to us. You have to have some idea about why you're doing what you're doing. You have to have some idea about why this country, why it needs the Constitution. And I think one of the best things to do is, and because you would not believe how many people have not done this, is go get a copy of the Constitution and read it. It's not like it's a massive tome that's very long and confusing, because it's not, because it was never meant that for the government to have the powers that it has now. As a matter of fact, that a great deal of the Constitution is written with that specifically in mind, and that is limiting the powers of the government. Limiting the powers of the government. Now, the government, of course, and then a government is not a sentient thing, but it still remains that once the government is created, it's going to do everything that it can, everything with its power, to grow itself, to get more power. That's the nature of the beast. It's going to grow itself. It's going to get more power. It's going to become more powerful. It's going to become the biggest dog on the block, because that is the nature of government. And I don't think I've ever heard it described better than by Washington when he said, when he spoke about government being a fearful, well, let me make sure that I'm getting the right words on. Okay, since I can't type in. And Washington says that government is like fire. It's a dangerous servant and a fearful master. All right? Government is not reason. It's not eloquent. It is force. Like fire is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. And I don't know that it could be described better than that. Let me read that to you again. Government is not reason. It is not eloquent. It is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. And that it is. You know, we have a great deal of discussion about the government's role right now in making sure that the people are taken care of with welfare and food stamps and Medicaid and on and on and on. The list is almost endless of how the government is reaching out to take care of the people. And that's how it explains itself. It says, we are here to help you. We are here to take care of you. Throwing a big buffalo coat of benevolence over its shoulders. We're here to help you. We're here to take care of you. We're here to do the right thing. We're here to provide benevolence. The only problem is that the government's benevolence is done at the point of a gun. The giving that the government does, the stuff that they give has been collected at the point of a gun. The people giving the money to the government, because the government has no money. The government has no money, no ability to create money other than having the treasury print it out. And no ability to create money other than by taking money from you, from the citizens, right? So the money that the government is giving away in its benevolence is being taken away from the people at gunpoint. Because believe me, if you don't pay your taxes, or you say you paid them and they say you didn't, then they're going to come to your house, and they're going to come to your house with guns. They do it every single day. They come to your house with guns, and they take the money. They take whatever it is that they feel that you owe them. And that's the government's form of benevolence. Long before the government was paying out money, the American people were taking care of each other. They were making sure that they were making sure that their neighbors were taken care of, that people had clothes on their backs, that they had food. There recently was sent an essay by Lou Rockwell on Davy Crockett. I'm sure if you Google that, it'll take you to it. It was a wonderful essay, a story about how Davy Crockett as a representative to his state, the Congress wanted to vote to pay a sum of money to the widow of a Navy officer. And of course, in their minds, they said, well, we have more than enough money. We have plenty. You know, we've got, a bonus. This year we collected way more money than we actually had to spend. Now that right there should be one of the first danger signs in a system. They collected way more money than they needed. Now why was that? The government should collect only the amount of money it needs to run the projects that it's running. And every time it collects more, it creates the idea that there is a never-ending fountain, that there's a surplus that can be used for in numerous projects. And once the project has become a government-funded project, it very seldom ever leaves that status. And Davy Crockett voted against it, and everybody was just astounded. They were saying, you know, how can you do this? You know, she's the widow of this renowned naval officer. And he said, yeah, I know, I understand that, and I'm all for it, but let me ask you this. There are a lot of veterans who left widows, thousands and thousands of them, and this particular veteran, he said he served his time and then retired out of the military and then went on into private practice. He said, as far as I know, the government, he received all of his benefits, all his pensions, everything. So as far as I know, the government left no outstanding debt with him. There was no reason to pay the $20,000 that they wanted to pay to the widow. He said, let me ask you this. He goes, how about this? If we all feel so strongly about it, then I will donate a week of my pay, and if everybody else here does the same thing, then that will cover the $20,000 that we want to give. And we can do it that way rather than taking it from the American people. Now, it ended up that not a single person decided to do that. They were all angry with Crockett, and they wanted to talk him out of it. And I'm not going to tell you the whole story, but I would like you to read it. I would like you to Google Lou Rockwell and Davy Crockett, and then read. It's a very short essay, but read about the reasons that the government can go terribly wrong in its spending, and ours has. Ours has gone terribly wrong, like a drunken teenager with a credit card. You know, the ones that the kids that get the credit cards right at the absolute wrong time. They get flooded with them once they get to college with the credit cards. And not everyone does it wrong, but a great number of them do because they don't understand what they're doing. They don't understand the inherent dangers and the devil that's inside debt. And it completely destroys the idea, the good idea of not spending what you don't have. Because almost all human beings do, but we in America have gotten very, very good at this, about spending what we don't have. If you look at the financial, the information from credit card companies and stuff, you'll find that a vast majority of Americans have between $10,000 to $20,000 of credit card debt. Millions of Americans with $10,000 to $20,000 of credit card debt. And that is the devil incarnate there. And don't get me wrong, because I'm not trying to talk about capitalism as an evil, because it's not. However, it certainly has some horrible pitfalls in it, and I think that credit card debt is one of these. All right, but then you can take that straight over to the government, and you have the government that is deciding to take money that it doesn't. The government has, like I said, remember, the government has no money. The only money the government has to spend is the money it takes from you at gunpoint. Now, I know most people will fill out their income tax, and they send it in with no problem. Nobody's physically standing there leveling a firearm at them, but they are figuratively doing it. They're figuratively doing it. They know that if they do not send that in, that somebody's going to come. Somebody, that a huge machine is going to come and steamroll over them and at the end of the day, it's going to be at the point of a gun. I'm not saying that we shouldn't pay taxes, because we should. There's a lot of things that our government does for us that is part of the things that it should be doing while it is looking out for the welfare of the people, you know, building roads and stuff like that. But it has morphed into this completely different thing now, where the government has instilled in the people the idea that the government paying for education, that education is a right, that free medical care is a right. It has made each of the areas that it has gone into and buried itself in, each of those things are now enshrined as a sacred right of the American people, provided by the government. so folks don't go after the sacred rights. And once again, I'm not advocating anything that would get me or anybody else in trouble, although I'm sure that just protesting it is enough to get you in trouble. But I am advocating for everybody to take a look at this stuff. Take a look at the things. It's easy to do. You can Google anything in the government. You can Google it, and you can get access to the laws that are passed, the bills that are up for consideration. And take a look at the things that's going on in the government, because that's one of the ways that the government right now is getting so many things past us, is because it's become such a huge behemoth, and then we are bombarded daily with 500 channels on our televisions of information and comedy and drama and you name it. We've got cell phones with people calling us and texting us. We've got emails. We've got the social media stuff, the Facebook and the Twitter and you name it. It's all out there, and I'm doing it too. I'm really not doing it because I want to. I'm not doing any of it, any of the social media stuff, because I want to. Usually I'm doing it because I have a purpose in mind. I'm either pushing Appleseed or pushing BattleRoadUSA.com. I'm doing it because I'm trying to get a message out to folks. But nonetheless, we're bombarded by this all day long, every single day. We've got tons and tons of information flying at us, just like if we were standing in the middle of a paper shredding company and a hurricane ripped the roof off and came in. That's what it's like. And while this is going on, we have the government that's passing bills every single day. Something's going on. And how do you know about it? Because a lot of times they don't say anything. Because I guarantee you, there's a lot of stuff that's going on in the government that they're doing it like when my dogs might get into the trash, right? They grab some trash and they run out into the field with it. And I look out there for them. I don't see them. They put their head up a little bit. And I'll take a look at them. And they put their head down. They're hiding from me. That's how I envision the government a lot of times passing a lot of these bills. Sliding stuff by us. And I don't think that the majority of the people in the government are bad people. I don't think that they're bad people. They're all inherently evil people with any kind of a hidden agenda or anything like that. There could be. I don't know. There could be. But I don't believe that there is. I don't believe any government, especially ours, any government could ever get its stuff together enough that it could do something like that. But then again, who knows? I just have to tell you about the fact that we don't see the common and obvious that's going by us during the day because it's part of that snowstorm of information that we're getting. But I still don't think that our representatives are doing things that are inherently evil, that they're trying to be evil. Some are. Yeah, some are. There's some bad apples out there that really need plucking and shredding. But I don't think the majority are not. I think that they are disconnected. I think that the majority of the folks that are in the government, I don't think that they, the most of them, I don't think they have to mow their yards or that they wonder how they're going to pay the next fuel bill or change their tires or or put a new radiator in their vehicle, stuff like that. They're separated from that, and they don't understand that. You don't understand what a lot of the rest of the nation goes through. They're living on a different plane. And then I think that a lot of the folks, and you see this all the time, you see it in real life, and then, of course, art imitates life, and they make plenty of movies about it, about the folks who go into the government, and they're trying to do the right thing, but they eventually get ground down. They're trying to push a 1 million-pound grinding wheel uphill while it's spinning in the reverse way, and they just get ground up. And they eventually become part of it. And then that is also part of the way that the government works. You know, you've got to get along to go along. You got to go along to get along. That means that you have to do things. You have to compromise yourself in order to get things done. Now, I see some people in the chat room. Let me pick out some of the good stuff they're saying here. Let's see. I just saw somebody saying something that they thought one of the people was inherently evil. Okay, I see who it is. Kevin says that Nancy Pelosi, he thinks Nancy Pelosi is inherently evil. Well, or she's the poster child for inherently evil. That could be. I don't know. And like I said, we're not going to, you guys can do this stuff in the chat room. I'm not going to read some of the stuff that's good that they're writing here, because like I said, we're not going to try and dash folks. I've got plenty of dashing that I could do, but I save that for the campfire. I'm going to dash somebody, and usually I just dash them when I'm in the room by myself. There's a channel that follows the government. They've got a TV channel where you can watch everything going on live. That's usually where I save my dashing for. Okay, but I've been talking here for quite a while about this. What I'd like to do, I'd like some of you guys to start calling in. Let's hear your ideas on this, okay? 347-308-8790. What I'm specifically asking for is the things that you think can be done. First of all, I'd like to know what you think about another 4 years with President Obama. And like I said, I just want to hear some factual stuff and no name-calling or screaming or anything frothing them off. What do you think that the another 4 years is going to do to the nation and why? And then I'd like to hear some folks talking about what they think that we can do to make things better. Because, like I said, that's the whole point of what we're doing at Appleseed. That's the whole point of being a human being, right? The whole point of being a good human being is to make things better. Make things better for yourself, for your family, for your home, for your community, for your neighborhood, for your city, for your county, for your state, for your nation. You want to make things better. So how are you going to do this? And that's what I would like. I can see Ed. Ed was on the line just listening. I could see him on the switchboard. He was just listening. But he jumped out of there quick whenever I said I was going to start kicking people in. Ed, you can listen on that. You can listen on the switchboard if you want. I promise I'm not going to drag you into the ring. He says he hung up and turned on the computer just to be safe, to make sure he didn't get drug in. I'm not going to drag anybody into the ring if they don't want to. You can talk to Sam first. Sam will, if you call in, Sam will just ask you if you're listening, if you want to talk. and he does it off the air, so no, you're not gonna, nobody's gonna hear what you're saying. And then he'll put you on the air. But at the same time, what I'd like to see you guys to be doing is like I said, is just while you're sitting here listening, just a few minutes that we're listening here. Why don't you Google executive orders and read some of them and see what you think about some of this. If you find something interesting, then call in. We'll talk about that. There were a ton of executive orders written during Barack Obama's first 4 years dealing with national security within the United States. And that is all of the things that our government would do if it felt that its citizens were becoming unruly or they were getting out of hand, and what steps would be taken to control them. So if you guys want to look up some of those, then we'll talk about them on the air. If you want to look up some of the bills and stuff that are being considered and talk about that, well, we'll do that. Usually we don't, because you know that the Appleseed philosophy is that most of the bills and stuff that our government produces, those are the equivalent of the icebergs that the folks on the Titanic face. They're the equivalent of the icebergs that were threatening the Titanic. So why wouldn't we be worried about those? Why wouldn't we want to jump up and down and yell when we see something? And the reason is because just like the Titanic, the icebergs that you see out there in the ocean, even if the guys that night, you know, the guys on the Titanic, on the fateful night that it struck the iceberg, there were several guys up in the crow's nest, and their job was to watch for icebergs, you know, to let the bridge know when icebergs were coming. Now, this particular night, the purser had locked the cabinet containing the binoculars and the rest of the gear that the crew members were supposed to be using in order to spot the icebergs. He had locked them up, and he'd taken the key with him when he went to bed. And they didn't want to wake him. I suppose they were fearful that they would get on the bad side if they woke him, so they didn't wake him. All right? So they ended up in the crow's nest at night without any binoculars to see what was coming. Okay? But here's the thing. So they did. Today they had the binoculars, and they saw the iceberg coming, and they were yelling out, "Look out, it's coming, help, help." And they missed the iceberg. Then the ship would have been saved, right? Well, yeah, it would have been for that particular moment, from that particular iceberg. But here's the problem. There are literally millions of icebergs in the ocean in that area at that time of year. So they missed that one. But there was another one behind it, and another behind that one, and another behind that one. So what's the answer? Is the answer really to make sure that you've got guys up in the crow's nest that are looking for the icebergs to make sure that they don't hit it? Well, that's a good temporary thing. But that's not the answer, right? Because odds are they're going to they're going to run into one because the ocean's full of them. So the answer is not to point out the iceberg and yell, look out. Look out, here comes House Bill 686. And it's talking about limiting freedom of speech in a church zone, or it's talking about not allowing pastors and rabbis and whoever else, not allowing them to say certain things. How can they do that? Well, you should be on the lookout for that, and you should yell when you see it. The problem is like I said, there's millions of icebergs, and there's thousands of bills. The government, I don't think, is ever going to slow down its march of creating additional laws and rules and bills and on. That is the nature of the beast, right? Because if they said, all right, we've got enough rules, then most people say, well, then what do we need you guys for then? Well, we got all the rules we need, then you guys can take off because we've got all the rules and the government isn't, the Congress and the folks are not the people that enforce the rules, so what will we need them for? Well, they need to make more rules. They need to make more. They need to govern us more. They need to make sure we're doing exactly what the government thinks we need to be doing in order for us to be good citizens. So in order to fix this situation, we can't put people up in the crow's nest with binoculars to look for the icebergs, because even if they see it, even if we have some gosh darn great zigzagging ship that can miss them, eventually our luck's going to run out. We're going to smack dab into one of the icebergs and we're going to sink. We're going to go down with all hands. Yeah. So what do we do? Well, we can't change the fact that there's icebergs out there, right? Well, maybe we can. So instead of us pointing out each and every iceberg and yelling, iceberg, oh, look out, here it comes. What if we crank the temperature up there, right? What if we change the climate? And that is the goal of Appleseed, you know? Looking at the icebergs, yelling at icebergs, that falls in the category of weather, right? Because that's what we're experiencing right now. We're experiencing not a change of weather. We're experiencing a continuation of the weather that we've had for the last 4 years. Because look at it. Weather always changes. It will be sunny this week. It will be cloudy and rainy next week. And that's the same with us. It'll be Democrats this week. And then they'll do something, and everybody will get angry, and then it'll be Republicans. And then the Republicans will do what they always do, which is nothing. They'll do nothing. And then everybody will get mad at them for doing nothing, and then they will change again. So that's the weather. Rainy this week, sunny next week, you know. What good is that? What good is it to jack with the weather? What you have to do is you have to alter the climate. You have to crank the temperature up so that there are no more icebergs. They can't form up. The temperature doesn't allow them to. Once they crack off the mainland body of ice, they immediately begin to melt. And it's the same thing with us. It's what we need to do. We need to make sure that we change the climate, that we change the idea in the mind of the politicians, that anybody that jacks with the Constitution, anybody that tries to destroy or limit our freedoms, then they will disappear. They will know this. So the bills won't even think about making a bill like that because they know that would be the end of them. And that's that's our place. That is our power. Our power is usually in our strong hand, index finger. But it's not for squeezing the trigger. It's for poking the ballots. That's where our strength lies. That's what we should be doing. Changing the climate so that the the icebergs can't form up. All right, we're going to take a call now. We're taking Spitstickler. He says he wants to talk. He said he wants to talk calmly and coolly and give us his idea of what he believes that we'll be experiencing in the next 4 years and what he thinks that we can do to make the nation better. Go ahead, Kirk. Welcome to the show. I'm glad you called in.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Gal.
Did you stop my mouth from getting dry?
Well, we're talking about, icebergs and different things of that sort and different things we could point out. And, man, there's a ton of them. It feels like we're surrounded. But, the one thing, and Floyd, I see he's on the forum. I talked to him the other night, and he brought up something very interesting. So I hope I'm not stealing his thunder here because I went and looked it up, and I wanted to read the total number of popular votes for the red guy this past Tuesday was 58 million in 2012.
Right.
In 2008, total number of votes for the red guy was 59 million, almost 60 million. So votes went down. Same thing for the blue guy, 61 million this time. Last time, 69.5 million. So voting across the board went down. And, we're looking around who to blame. I mean, we need to start looking at ourselves. The country needs to start looking at ourselves because we have the opportunity to change things, but we're not doing it. And I don't know if it's
you see that happening all the time.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we know that the way that our government's set up and the way that our elections are run, that the people themselves do not actually elect the president. The electoral votes that will elect the president. But by the time it gets to be the president, it's really in the last couple of decades, it really hasn't mattered because what we've ended up with has not been the best choice for the country. So how do we fix that? And the answer is we can't fix it. Once it gets up to voting for the president, man, it's done. You're out of luck.
Yeah.
But what you can do is you can fix it before it gets there. Right?
I agree.
That's why I keep telling you guys that all politics are local. Everybody knows that. It's an old saying, and it's a true saying. All politics are local. And that's where it starts, and that's what we've got to do. We've got to start feeding in. We got to feed the machine some good stuff, and then we've got to demand that it stays on that diet. Because what we're doing right now is it's getting all of the bad stuff, and when we get to the point of trying to elect the president, then we're left with some very sad choices, and I don't mean that to be berating either one of them. I don't personally agree with the majority of the stuff that President Obama has been pushing, some of his main projects. But of course, there's plenty of stuff that he does that's good. All right, it usually doesn't get reported on. But there's plenty of stuff that he does that's good. There's plenty of stuff that Bush did that was good, that Clinton did that was good, that Bush Sr. did that was good, but the problem is not with the president. It's with the rest of the folks. It's the folks that are spending money by the boatloads. And that's usually not the president. That's the people that we have representing us. That's the senators and congressmen that we have that are spending like there's no tomorrow. All right? And that's where we need that's where we've got to do something about it. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, that The number of actual voters and stuff like that has gone down. But it does. It goes up and down. That's like that's the weather part that I was talking about. That's why I'm saying we need to change the climate. We need to change the climate so that it is that it's taught in school, that it's taught that you're going to vote, that it's your duty to vote. It's your sacred obligation to be out there and be voting and to take part in what's going on in the nation. Right now, I mean, they had some stuff on the other day on the television that was talking about the ignorance of the voters. Now, they were picking on Democrat voters. And I say Democrat because that's the party. It's Democrat. It's not the Democratic Party. It's the Democrats. And they were picking on the Democrats, and they were asking them questions like, does it bother you that President Obama's running mate, Paul Ryan, is black and that he's a Muslim? I mean, you know, people were saying, oh, no, I think that's good. I think it's good that he's, you know, that he's standing up for his beliefs and stuff like that, and on and on and on. And I don't think that they were going through 100 people and picking out the worst answers. They were just, this was the people they were hitting on the street that day. That is the folks that are electing, that are out there pushing the buttons too. Now, what can we do about that? I don't know. You know, that's always been the case in our nation, in every nation. And what can we do to make sure that people do know what they're voting for and why? I don't know. You got any ideas?
I mean, everything starts with education. So, I mean, if they're not getting an education in school, you know, what do we expect?
Right. So I'm going to bring on some more folks with us. All right, we're going to have like a round table here. This is the old guide up in Maine. Old guide, OG. Original
Good
gangster.
Evening.
Good evening. How are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, well, what do you have
show?
For us? I know that your show spends a lot more time talking about politics and the nature of the beast. Give us some of the insights that you've gotten from your show.
Well, I try to relate history. You know, our forefathers to our present day, their ideas as contrasted by ideas of politicians today who are often unfamiliar with our forefathers, and they say, where did you learn this stuff? You know, first of all, they're not sure it's really true what I'm saying. And then they say, where did you learn that? Well, you could learn it in an apple seed. I throw that in on a frequent basis.
Well, most of the people don't know anything about the government or anything about the Constitution. They're ready to tell you that the Constitution says, my gosh, it says right in the Constitution that there is a separation of church and state. And it's right in the Constitution, written right in there. And of course, I got a copy in my wallet, and I just take it out and I hand it to them. I go, let's Show me real quick, because it's a very thin book. The Constitution is not big at all. So show me real quick where it is, because if it's in there, then I'm going to get on your bandwagon, and I'm going to wave your flag, and I'm going to be right there with it. But show me first where it is in there. And they can't, because it's not, because they're relying on unreal stories that they've heard. Nobody's taking the time to read it. Nobody's taking the time to educate themselves on it.
Well, I carry one in my pocket every day. When it wears out, I
got a new one.
Put
I slide it in there.
Yeah. I got plenty of them.
My wallet has a back pocket that's just the right size for the Constitution, except a little tiny bit sticks out. So a little tiny bit of the edges get frayed, but the rest of it's safe and sound. I would relate it to exactly what we do. You know, there's a lot of people out there all across the nation, probably they said there's like 80 million of them, 80 million of your fellow Americans that have firearms. But I can tell you, I would imagine that just about every single one of us who's hearing my voice has then right there, when one of those people with one of the, with their, one of their firearms either swept them or they had their finger on the trigger or they did any number of unsafe things because they didn't know, because nobody had told them that, even though, right, nobody should really have to tell you this, nobody told them that that having a round in the chamber and having your finger on the trigger as you're walking through the woods, that might not be a good thing. That's really not a safe thing. They just, that's what they've always done. That's the same nature of the beast that we face with our fellow American voters, is that a lot of them are out there walking around on the streets, getting ready to walk into the election booth and plug in their vote with their finger on the trigger and a round in the chamber and the safety off and their sights aren't on the target. They're just walking around. That's the same thing that we're facing. So how do we fix it? How does this get fixed?
Well, it does start with education, and we're, of course, in Appleseed, we're in the education business. That's what we do.
Absolutely, yeah. That's what we do. We've got dual purpose education. We're teaching people about the fundamentals of rifle marksmanship. Now, at the same time, they get a rock solid course in rifle safety. That's just thrown in for free. And on top of that, they'll get a couple of hours usually during the 2 days of information about the beginning of our nation. And sometimes if you have a guy like my buddy Dean, Didactic, they may get more than just a couple of hours. They may get a whole 20 minutes or 25 minutes on the history of what happened before April 19th. God bless him. And we're going to give them some information about that. That's where we start out. That's the whole purpose of what we do. You know, we're like a launching pad, you know. We're getting folks there. We're getting them revved up, fueled up. We're pointing them in the right direction. Then we're lighting the fuse, and we're shooting them off out into the out into space. And we're hoping that we've pointed them in the right direction. And we're hoping that they've listened to the things that we've told them at the Appleseed, and that they're going to use those things to help make a better nation. So if that's one of the answers, then what else can we do? What else besides that? We've got Appleseed, and we're all on the same page there. We're all beating the Appleseed drum just as hard as we can. What else is there that we can do? What else can we do to help guide our nation? All right, I'm gonna bring another couple of fellows on with us. We've got Warren who wants to talk. Warren, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, I guess, for the next 4 years. How about yourself?
My wife told me to, when I woke up the next day after Election Day, my wife said, go back to sleep for another 4 years, you want.
You know what? My wife told me the same thing. We watched it, but we're not night owls. We watched it for a while, and then when our eyes start getting heavy, my wife clicks onto Judge Judy. That's like her lullaby show, and she'll watch that until she goes to sleep. And of course, I go to sleep too. And when we woke up the next morning, I saw her reach over the table, and she got her phone, and she manipulated some of the controls on it, and she looked at her and she just goes, go back to sleep, honey. Go back to sleep with the thought that everything's going to be okay for the next 4 years. And just kind of snickered and got out of bed and walked off. So I knew what she was saying. But here's the thing, okay? It's done. It's a done deal. Now
yeah.
We're here. We're here for the next 4 years. So how are we going to do? First of all, you got any ideas
all
on
right.
What you think that that is going to be problems with the fact that we have this the same president? And if you do, got any ideas on what we can do to get by, to live underneath those problems or to make things better? Because like I said, that's our main goal, is making things better. What do you think? What do you think that are going to be any of the differences or any of the problems or good things that another 4 years of President Obama are going to bring us?
Well, I've got a couple of things on that. I think, first of all, the other team won because they were better organized. They had the Chicago organization working very hard. And they've just enlarged their Chicago politics style nationwide now. You know, you see how that goes with, you know, money under the table, favors being done here, favors being done there. It's not like it hasn't been done on the other side either. As for education, well, you know, you look who our educators are. You know, I have friends who are teachers that went to Columbia University, and I have to tell you, some of their ideas are a little bit, you know, the way they think is a little bit different and little fun. But we need to engage these people, and slowly, calmly, like, you know, you're not going to change the direction of a big ship really quickly. And the other team has been working a long time at this, just from, these crazy hippie ideas of the 70s are now, you know, some of the people with their hands on the wheel. And, it's just come to fruition, and maybe things will have to get bad enough that the rest of America kind of like goes, holy mackerel. You know, we handed the teenagers the credit card. Let's get it back. In the meantime, as you know, the folks that are behaving as parents are going to still have to pay off that credit card. So that's, you know, these poor kids are going to have a debt to pay off that's bigger than the college debt that they're going to assume on their own later. It's kind of, you know, an organizational problem. We need to organize much the same way, although I don't think that we should register dead people to vote, and maybe the RICO laws should be applied to political parties since they have a pattern of corrupt behavior there, Scout. So, you know, we need to change, like you said, the climate where, first of all, politics, you know, the right to vote is very important and has to be handed, you know, every citizen needs to be enfranchised to vote. But maybe,
right.
You know, we ought to be checking closer as to, are they citizens or are they alive? I'm not sure that dead people
aren't
citizens.
Well, I heard a lot of stories, and I don't know how much of them were true, but I heard a lot of stories about the unions going around and rounding up the illegals to vote, telling them that they were going to be deported if they didn't vote for Obama, about the unions being told that that if they did not vote for Obama, they would walk up right now and put their union cards on the table, on and on. But, you know, I don't know if that's true or not. And, you know, even if it is, then it's not right. But you, like you said, they were very, very organized.
It devalues the, you know, that sacred right and duty if you just let anybody that's not a citizen vote. You know, it's you know, that
well,
that's
thankfully here in Texas, when I walked up to the voting table, and of course it was very casual out here. Like I said, I'm out in the middle of nowhere. I went to the community center and walked in, and I think there were three machines there, and there were just the people running the place. It was a guy and his wife and daughter, and I had to show all of my identification to vote. Everything had to be checked. Everything had to be rechecked, and then I got my number and got on the machine. And I've also heard a lot of stuff about electronics, tomfoolery and stuff like that, but I don't know. And I don't know if somebody knows for sure that something happened. I'd be glad to hear about it. But most of it, I don't know. Listen, I've got another guy on hold here. We got Ed on hold, and he said he's barely under control. So I made him wait 13 minutes now to make sure that he was cooling down. Nonetheless, guys, don't have your phones real close to your ears when he comes on. Ed, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I just feel that I need to say something that has not been said, and it's that the Republican Party, for better or worse, has lately been chasing away certain elements of the party, which they call rhinos, you know, Republicans in name only. And, you know, I happen to be one of those folks. I'm registered Republican, but I have very, very much libertarian leanings. If Romney had treated Ron Paul and his delegates better at the Republican National Convention, he might have been able to bring me under the tent. But they treated us like pariahs. They, you know, did everything in their power to illegally, you know, and against the rules of and process of the convention to make sure that we couldn't put his name up for a vote. I mean, we were going
absolutely
to lose.
Absolutely. I told you, that's the nature of the beast. Man, it's self-protection. And that's the problem with our government. It's gotten our government has gotten to the point where it's not looking out for us. It's looking out for itself. It's trying
exactly
to make sure that it stays in power, no matter what the results to the nation. That's where the problem has come in. I think stuff like term limits would go a great deal of the way toward helping to resolve some of this. You've got the term limits, and you tell the guys, look, you got two terms. That's it. So don't build your feather bed there. Don't get the hot tub installed because you're not going to be there that long. Man,
well,
and start limiting
this
so that there can't be dynasties and legacies there.
Let me ask you this, Scout. You said two terms. Is that, you know, both House and Senate? Or do they get through two terms in each?
I don't know. I would need to look at that more because I don't know the best way to do it because, you know, on the one hand you think about it and you go, well, there's got to be some kind of a learning curve. But does there? I mean, do they really need that?
Well,
I remember my first idea was this, is that we don't hold elections to get our representatives. Instead, there's a lottery. There's a lottery, and you get a letter in the mail and it says, greetings, just like the old draft board announcements, greetings. You will be reporting to Washington in 5 months or 4 months. You are going to serve a term of 2 years, and then you will return to civilian life. You'll be paid a good salary to do this. Your job will be guarded and guaranteed that you'll have a job when you return, and that's it. And that's the way people would be elected. But I don't know. Is that going to fix anything? Because they'll have people that are probably ready to jump on those guys that are elected and or that are to the lottery and try and change them. I don't know what the answer is.
I personally like the idea of a lottery a lot. But, I mean, if you're going to go with term limits, what I really believe is that you should state something similar to what I'm about to say, which is that if you have been in office less than 10 years, you can be elected to another office. That way, the maximum that you could serve ever is 16 years. And that seems to be good to me because, I mean, you said two terms. Two terms in the Senate is 12 years. So if they are in Congress for five terms and then they get elected to the Senate, that's 16. They're done.
Right.
If they're in office in Congress for 10 years and they're elected to the presidency, that's 14, done. And, you know, that sort of limit I
just
live with. But
I
like the
like
lottery
that
better.
I don't like the idea of guys being there 10, 12, 14, 20 years because then it's no longer the people that are important. It's that guy. That guy knows where all the bodies are buried. That guy has done all the deals. He's the most powerful guy, and you got to do what he says. I don't like that idea. I don't like there being like godfathers in Washington. I don't think that it is such a complex. I know it's a complicated job, but I don't think it's such a complicated one that you have to do it for 20 years to be good at it. I think you should be able to. I think that we need some fresh people instead of a bunch of people, like I said, who have already done all the deals. They got to get the dope on everybody, and they and they're forcing people to adhere to their ways of doing things.
Well, you know, this is why one of the things that I think would be a very good start is the repeal of the 17th Amendment. I mean, the senators should represent the state's interests. By electing them, we have changed the dynamic of the entire union.
That's right. That's right. They are there to represent their state. They're not there to become part of a federal being or a federal entity. They're supposed to be there representing their state. Now, in this last election, when I voted here, I made sure that all of my votes, when I made sure that I studied the ticket ahead of time, and in the majority of the cases, what I did was, and where I was lucky in certain parts of it, is that there were a great many of the races here were between Republican and Libertarian. There was no Democrat that was running. And every time there was one of those, and a couple of times there were a couple of Republicans I thought actually did a fairly decent job. Nonetheless, I made sure that I voted for the third-party candidate in every instance where it wasn't going to be a showdown between the two parties. I think that the two-party system right now is absolutely destroying our ability to get anything done. People aren't caring about, they're not caring about the people, they're caring about the game, how many points they've got, how many players, play fantasy football for Washington. We've got to do X, Y, Z so that we can retake the Senate. Come on, guys! And that's not the game. The game is what can we do to ensure that we're doing the best possible job for the people that we represent. Like you said, our state, our state's interests. Now, obviously, there has to be an understanding of the country as a whole, that you're doing things for the country as a whole, but you should be doing things for the country as a whole from the outlook of I'm sitting here in the driver's seat of my state, and I want to make sure, first of all, that my state is making it wherever I'm driving it to, and that's where their mind should be.
Sorry, Scout, I was typing on the forum there for a moment.
That's all right. Listen, I'm going to bring another voice in because Melissa wants to talk about the UN treaty that's coming in, and I'm always. I think we're always lucky to have Melissa giving this information because Melissa actually goes, she actually does this almost full time, and she's been traveling around spreading the word of especially what's going on in the UN for quite a while. Melissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention it was the first order of duty after he was reelected is he has restarted up the UN Small Arms Treaty issue. He knows that he'll never win through Congress.
The first thing he did that next morning,
yeah. Exactly, the first thing he did. And he knows that he can't control us until we're disarmed, and so he's going to push until that happens. And sadly, this train is moving faster. You know, it's nice to think about what if, but, you know,
yes.
Republican, Democrat, that's nothing more than just a distraction for us.
That's exactly
right.
It's
a cover for the New World Order. And, you know, they're on target and they're moving forward. And Tuesday was a sad day for America. I know that our founding fathers rolled over in their grave. There should have been an earthquake. All our founding fathers rolling over in their grave. But, you know, again, I don't think our election process is legitimate. I think, you know, particularly here in North Carolina, there were several people who claimed to have voted for Romney and it came up with Obama's name. And that happened in several polling places. You can't tell me that was just a fluke that happened here and there. It happened a lot. So, you know, I think if we really had the truth about our election process, we would find out that this was all predestined. I know that, you know, my son is as Navy Special Forces, and that a lot of our military were disenfranchised. Their votes were not counted. And since they tend to go Republican, many of their votes, they weren't even allowed to cast votes because they moved from one base to the other. And so many, many of our troops were disenfranchised. And, you know,
That's a common, that's a very common thing. It happens almost every election cycle, no matter who's running or how it's done. A great deal of the time, they make sure that, especially if we have troops deployed overseas, they try to make sure that somehow, I couldn't tell you for sure.
Well, my son's military, and I'm telling you, he told me, well, I can't even repeat some things that he told me, but you know, the Benghazi thing.
He shouldn't
thing,
be talking to his mom
you know,
that way.
Well, you know, sadly, if the people on the line tonight are getting all their news from television media, they're not getting the truth. They're not getting it all. They're getting propaganda. They're going to have to get their news elsewhere. Hopefully
most
people realize that.
People.
But, you know, the average voter thinks that they can go to TV and get the truth, and it's not the truth. Benghazi, my goodness, that was an inside job. You know, they were staging a kidnap attempt. You know, it was all inside. And, they screwed up and killed our ambassador, and that wasn't supposed to happen. And then they tried to cover it up, and, you know, our SEALs that rushed in against orders and fought them off for 7 hours before they were murdered, calling for help the whole time. Our administration did not send help, actually relieved a rear admiral and a general of their command because they were going to defy orders. You know, the military takes an oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, domestic and foreign. So they knew what was going on, and they rose to the occasion. Well, they were immediately relieved of their command. So what's going on, you know, within the White House? Obviously, it's an inside job that went bad. That didn't turn out quite the way they had planned. So that was covered up, and it was snuffed over, and they stonewalled for how long? 2 months they stonewalled because of the election and covered it up. And I think if the American people knew the truth about Benghazi, how could they?
Well,
so,
there's a lot of things that there's a huge amount of things that will probably that most of America is never going to know the truth about it. You're never going to know the real thing, because that's one of the things about government, you know. And when you get up to a certain level, a lot of the things that are done are done for their face value, not for the reason that they're being said to be done, because there are so many other things involved in those decisions.
Right.
Let me read you a list, and I want to try to make sure that this is correct. But President Obama has issued over 900 executive orders during his first.
And how about the NDAA that went in March? If anybody read that executive order alone, how could they vote for him? But they don't. They don't pay attention.
Let me give you a quick reading of these, and let me make sure that this is...
Of all 900?
No, this is... This is the Center for Western Journalism, this is part of a piece written on this. One of the things that President Obama has been doing, he's gotten really good at, is sidestepping in Congress, because his big thing for the last 4 years has been it's called the We Can't Wait initiative that he's that he's pushed through with his people and with his office. So we can't wait initiative. That means that we don't have time for this to go through Congress. We don't have time for this for you guys to do this. We've got to do this right now because I say it's important. And during that time, as I said, he pushed through over 900 executive orders, and that was before the end of his first 4 years. Let me read you a few of the ones that to me that caused me a little bit of concern because I don't know that they're needed, but somebody thinks they are. Executive Order 10990 that allows the government to take over all modes of transportation and the control of all highways and all seaports. Executive Order 10995, which allows the government to seize control of all communication and all media. Executive Order 10997 allows the government to take over all electrical, power, gas, petroleum, fuels, minerals, all everything in the nation. Executive Order 11000 allows the government to mobilize civilians into work brigades under the government's supervision. Now, to me, this sounds
as
like...
as communism.
I just think it just sounds like a forced situation because, allowing the government to mobilize civilians. I'm sure they're not saying, okay, you guys, raise your hands if you want to help. I'm sure they're saying you're going to do it. Executive Order 11001 allows the government to take over all health education and welfare education and functions. Executive Order 11002 designates the Postmaster General to operate a national registration of all persons. Executive Order 11003 allows the government to take over all airports, all aircraft, including commercial and private. Executive Order 11004 allows the Housing and Finance Authority to relocate and establish new locations for populations. They can take people and they can take them somewhere else and establish a new location for populations.
Right,
Executive
they can
Order
move people into your house if they want to.
Allows the government to take over all railroads, inland waterways, public storage facilities. There's plenty more. Like I said, there's over 900 of them. There's plenty more, and I'm not reading you these to try and put fear into you. What I'm asking you to do, and I'm sure a lot of people have not read these, what I'm asking you to do is to make sure that you are going out and you're reading and that you are being aware of what's being done, because just like the old guy said, and Ed and the rest of the folks, that a lot of the reason that we are in the position we're in is because of the ignorance of the American people and the ignorance of the American people's voting fingers, the apathy of Americans.
That's right.
The folks getting unplugged and deciding that either they don't think that their vote's going to make a difference, which, you know, that may or may not be right in whatever location they're in, but they don't think their vote's going to make a difference, or they simply have no knowledge whatsoever of anything that's being voted on. Ed,
what I've seen,
like,
particularly with young people, is they're very self-serving. And a lot of them see Obama as Santa Claus. What's in it for me? What kind of free stuff can I get? And and so goes 65% of our society. So you've got 35% carrying the load, and the rest of them are for a free ride waiting for Santa Claus to give them some more stuff.
That's right.
That's kind of it in a nutshell, isn't it? And after a while, the 35% get tired.
That's it. Ed, you got something?
Yeah, I do. I mean, what you have to do is look back on the education system, as a previous caller had mentioned. And what you have going on there is that, you know, the unions are protecting all of their buddies for teaching our kids, even if they don't, you know, they aren't particularly good at teaching our kids. So, I mean, you know, I don't have a problem with organized labor per se.
I have a problem with organized labor when it comes to public services, because with public services, you have, you know, different pieces of the government negotiating with these guys, and they don't really have real constraints on their money. They know that they can appropriate from us to people any amount of money that they really want to. You know, it's
They're just printing more.
Well, let's not even worry about national level politics right here at the moment, and the Federal Reserve, which I agree with entirely. But the education system has convinced our young folks, and in fact, this is a poll that I just read, said that they, young people under the age of 25, actually approve of socialism more than they approve of capitalism right now, today.
Absolutely.
And that is a real problem, because if our system is to actually move forward, if we were to hold true to our beliefs and what made this country great, that is an anathema of epic proportion. And I'm sorry for using big words.
Well, that's one of the things that we're trying to do, and I want to say we, I'm talking about Appleseed, and it's one of the things that I see done every time a young person shows up to an event. You know, I see a sea change in at least 50% of the kids who attend an Appleseed. And I agree. I think that, you know, this is part of the weather thing, and we want to make sure that we at Appleseed are trying to think of the climate. But, you know, part of the weather thing is that you have generations who raise their children differently. And a lot of the current generations have raised the children to think that everything comes to them. They don't have to work for anything. And that is the, like a fertile ground for socialism, is that things will come to them. If they don't have to do anything to make it come, it will just come to them.
But, Scout, let's be honest here. The current generation hasn't raised their children. Their children have been in daycare. They have been in school. Both parents have been working. No one's going to raise those children.
Yeah.
So
there's
no starting of value. I mean, it is that from age probably 3 until they're, you know, out in the workforce at 18, or if they go to college, and let's be honest there, I mean, the money is free money coming from the government, which is guaranteed by the government, so the big banks can't lose any money. And then on top of that, the government legislated that even if you go into bankruptcy, you cannot discharge student loans. So there is no possibility, zero, zilch, nada, for the banks to ever lose money for lending money to kids for their higher education. So given this unlimited free money, what has happened to the cost of education? The colleges know that they can charge more and more and more and more. I mean, I look at some of the benefits that what these students are getting whenever they're in school, and I go back and look at my own education, and I'm like, my fucking God. It's, you know, they're getting
a
ransom of education because they know they can charge for it.
Yeah, let's keep
Scott,
it,
I have a quote that kind of sums up, you know, what's happened with this election, and I wanted to read it real quickly if I can. It says, "The danger to America is not Barack Obama, but a citizenry capable of entrusting a man like him with the presidency. It will be far easier to limit and undo the follies of an Obama presidency than to restore the necessary common sense and good judgment to a depraved electorate willing to have such a man for their president. The problem is much deeper and far more serious than Mr. Obama, who was a mere symptom of what ails America. Blaming the Prince of the Fools should not blind anyone to the vast confederacy of fools that made him their prince. The Republic can survive a Barack Obama, who is, after all, merely a fool. It is less likely to survive a multitude of fools, such as those who made him their president." If that doesn't sum it up, I don't know what does.
Right. Listen, let me jump in here real quick with an update. And this is what I was trying to find while I was talking.
Okay.
And, which I'm sure you could probably tell that you can tell whenever I'm working the keyboard. And that is that some of the executive orders that I mentioned that Obama signed had actually been initially put in place by other presidents. All right, so I just want to make sure that you guys know that and that you're checking even the stuff that I'm telling you on here, because even though this is a pretty well studied website I'm on, that things aren't always exactly what folks say. Okay, so make sure that that you're checking these. That's why I was asking people to go ahead and make sure that you're checking and reading through the executive orders that not just Obama, but read through all of the executive orders that that have been put in place by our presidents, by the White House. All right, I'm going to take another tack right now. We've got about 18 minutes left. Let me ask you guys: there is a current trend by a great many people to put themselves into the mode of what I would call prepping. Prepping has become almost a mainstream event, which I'm actually very happy to see. You know, they've got the TV shows about it, Doomsday Preppers and stuff like that. And, of course, most of those shows are really ridiculous because you can tell that what they've done is they've tried to seek out somebody that was a little bit different, because I talked to a lot of the show's producers and stuff like that, so I know exactly what they're doing. Anyway, they have gotten folks to come on and talk about prepping, but the reality is that folks are, which, like I said, which is a good thing, and I don't think it's a tinfoil hat thing, because we talked about this several times about prepping. We've had guys on to talk about it on the show, and we're going to have them on again. We had the guys from In the Rabbit Hole. We've had Jack Spirko. I'm going to try and get Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy to come on the show. And we have Sheriff Richard Mack, who will be on within the next couple of weeks. And we're going to talk to a bunch of folks in the course of the coming year about prepping. Because you should be. Because, like I said, it's not a tinfoil hat thing. Just a generation ago, or it might have been a little bit more for some folks, but just a generation ago, our grandparents would have been called preppers because of the way that they lived their normal lives, by the fact that they kept a food reserve, that they kept extra coal oil and extra lamps, and on and on, so that they could get through hard times. And I think it's a good idea for people to be doing that now. And there's a good many of the folks that are doing that. You look just about anywhere in any state, you can just Google preppers or prepping in any state, you know, Texas preppers or, any state, and you'll get a huge group of folks in every state that are doing it, which, like I said, I think is an absolutely fantastic idea. I don't know how far you have to go. I mean, I know that a lot of folks are are going all the way out there to the edge where they're, you know, building like combat units and stuff like that. I don't know if that's necessary, but who knows? Maybe it is. But some folks are doing it. But the majority of folks are just actually thinking more of, do I have enough water? Do I have enough food? Do I have the medicine that I'm going to need and stuff like that? And they're really thinking about it, as they should be. And I've told you guys many times before that I believe that this is a good thing, that we should be depending on ourselves to take care of ourselves. I think that anybody, and then we still have a good many other people in this nation that they don't. They just think that if something happens, the government is going to take care of me. And when the government, when it finally uncoils itself from its huge sleeping anaconda mode and makes it to wherever the stuff's going on, the people are absolutely furious because they wanted something done right away, right then and there, to take care of themselves, for the government to take care of them. All right? But that's the dangerous double-edged sword that they're living under, because once you get to the point where that's what you consider the government to be taking care of you, that you're just a ward of the government, then that's what you will be. So I think it's a good idea that folks are taking a good amount of time to – there's a good number of folks across the nation that are taking this seriously. And I got to tell you, there is a current craze in the nation right now about zombies. You know, we've got the movies and the television shows and stuff like that, and people are really going nuts about it. And I think it's very symptomatic of the way that our generation is looking at or that it is manifesting its dread. You know, in the years before, if you go back and you look at the movies and stuff like that from the 50s and 60s, you kind of see some of the same thing. But normally it is the monsters,
the Red Scare,
situations created by atomic war or atomics out of control that create the huge ants and and all of the mutant monsters and stuff like that. And each generation, you know, figures out a way to manifest its fears and its dreads. And apparently the best way for the current generation is in zombies. And we're seeing this all over. You see even the CDC. You go to the CDC site. If you Google CDC and zombie, and they've got a whole list of things that they have put on the Center for Disease Control, a whole group of ads that they're running that are zombie-oriented, you know, telling you to make a plan, to get your gear together, make a plan for zombies. We've got reading a news report right here, and I got it on military.com. That's where one of the places that I get some of the information. It's October 29th, 2012, Associated Press says troops police prep for mock zombie invasion. And this is out of San Diego. It says move over vampires, goblins, and haunted houses. This Halloween terror aims to shake up even the toughest warrior. An untold number of zombies are coming to a counterterrorism summit attended by hundreds of Marines, Navy Special Ops, Army Special Forces, firefighters, and others to prepare them for their worst nightmare. So it's a huge exercise. So this is a very real exercise. This is not some type of big costume party. It says that this is going to be hosted on a 44-acre island on San Diego Bay. And it says everything that will be simulated at this event has already happened. It just hasn't happened all at once on the same night. But the training is very real. It just happens to be the bad guys that we're having a little fun with. It says hundreds of military, law enforcement, and medical personnel will observe the Hollywood-style production of a zombie attack as part of their emergency response training. So... even the military now has gotten into it, and they are working with Homeland Security, preparing the military and the citizens for a zombie attack. You can find this at military.com, all right? Google military.com and mock zombie invasion. It'll take you right to the ad here. And on that note, they're not the only ones doing this, okay? There are some other folks doing this, and I'm going to put the address into the chat board there so you can take a look at it. They're not the only ones doing this. Battle Road USA is hosting its own. It's the end of the world as we know it, Zombie Destruction Run. This is going to be February 23rd. That's on a Saturday, February 23rd. And we will have everyone gathering here at the Battle Road USA range in Davila. And we're going to cap it at about 100 runners. And what they'll be doing is they'll be following a looping about three and a half mile course. And along that course, there'll be either six or seven shooting stations with a rifle and pistol. And I believe there may be some hatchet stations thrown in or some zombie machete stations. And there'll be seven obstacles people will have to navigate. Along with this, and the obstacles are mainly like to get your heart rate up, get your cardio up before you hit a shooting station, so that you're not walking into the station all nice and relaxed. That you'll actually be pumped up a bit before you get in. And this is going to be February 23rd, 2013. I think that Mr. Martinez, my partner, is I think he's getting the Eventbrite registration ready for it. So I think that he and Scuzzy are working together on that, and probably the next day or so, you should start seeing the registration open up for that. And this is going to be a chance for everybody to get together and have a good time. When Mark and I ran this type of event out in Pecos, you heard us talk about that. We had Smokey Briggs that came on a couple of weeks ago to talk about it too. We ran this type of event the last 2 years. Now Mark has ran it. I believe he's ran it for either 6 or 7 years prior to last year. and it's a chance for folks to get together, to socialize, people who like to do stuff like this, who like to shoot. And it'll help you to get a gauge on your abilities. You know, it's only 3.5 miles, but can you do 3.5 miles under pressure? And make hits that count with your pistol and your rifle. Some will be close in pistol work, and then some of the rifle work will go out to you maybe 400, maybe even 500 meters. So can you do that? You know, can you make that work? And it's going to be a chance for you, for folks to find out and to socialize and have a good time doing it. So I want to make sure that you guys put that on your calendar. February 23rd, 2013, and hopefully it's going to turn into an annual event. And hopefully this coming year, when we do hold the event, we're hoping to get a lot of other things in there. We'd like folks to make it more of a gathering. Bring stuff that you can trade. Bring stuff that you can show off and show to other people. And I'm sure we'll have stuff to buy there. I'm sure we'll probably have some sponsors and vendors and stuff like that. And it's not just going to be a little thing. It's going to be a fairly big thing. And it's our first big event that we're holding like this. So we're also got our fingers crossed too, because we want to make sure that this turns out as a really worthwhile event for everybody who participates. So and I think I see Alonso 1 on the board. So I guess he's listening. If not, I'm going to make sure I'll talk to you tomorrow, to him and to Kirby, to Scuzzy. I see Scuzzy in there, so no, he's listening. To make sure we get the Eventbrite page up and running so that people can start pre-registering for the event. And We're going to need some of the folks. If you were part of the Pecos team, the ROs, then we're going to need some ROs to volunteer to help. And what the ROs will do is they'll run the day before the actual event. They'll come on Friday, and they'll run through the event on Friday, and then they will stay, and they will be range officers for the folks who are going to run through the event on Saturday. So we're going to need some volunteers, some help with that, and don't hold me to this, but I'm pretty sure that the way that we'll work it is that if you volunteer to work one of the ranges or to stand on the highway where they have to cross the highway and help make sure that people cross the highway safely, then we'll let you run the event for free. All right? I'm pretty sure that's the way that we're going to run it. So if any of you guys want to throw your hat in the ring for that, we don't have an infinite number of RO positions available, but if you want to throw your hat in the ring, then either send Alonso Juan or myself a message, and you can get me at rwva_range_scout, all one word, lowercase, @gmail.com. rwva_range_scout@gmail.com, and we'll start putting together the ROs for the event. And maybe you guys can come out and a couple of weekends before and help us do some of the finishing up. And you'll get to shoot, and you'll get to be the special RO. Guys, I'm sure we'll have some special thing for you to wear, something for the event. You'll get to be the special guys that are the end guys in the clique at the event. So that will be February 23rd, 2013. The ROs will have to be there on the 22nd, and then any of the ROs that want to volunteer to help finish setting up the course and maybe do some beta runs, because we've got a beta run scheduled for early in February that we'll need some folks to come through and run the course and make sure that we've got all the glitches out of it and stuff like that. And this will give you a chance to see how to test your mettle in the world of zombie destruction. We're going to have some good targets. I'm sure we're going to have plenty of good stuff for everybody. We're going to have about $900 worth of T-shirts and stuff like that, and plenty of other stuff that we can try and get our sponsors and stuff to donate. So be sure and put that on your calendars. Be sure and drop a line to Alonzo Juan or myself. I want to thank everybody that called in tonight, Ed, Melissa, Warren, all of you guys. I'd like to thank you guys for taking the time to call in and make sure that that you got your message out to folks. And I appreciate you putting out your points of view. And I want to thank everybody else that was listening. And I want to thank all the people that listen to the archives, because the people that listen on a regular night are usually dwarfed by the folks that listen to the archives. The archives usually will get 3,000 to 5,000 people a week will listen in the archives and stuff like that. So I want to thank all those folks that are listening in the archives or downloading it, stuff like that. And check the show notes, and we will see you this next Thursday, 7 p.m., all right? Thank you, everybody,
right.
And God bless you all. Thanks, Ed. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.
Yeah. And now Tracking who we meet, you call this liberty.